All right. Awesome job, ladies. Let's go over to Genesis chapter 20. Genesis chapter 20. And as you're going there, major prayer request that you need to continue praying for is Jephtha and his parents. I got a picture. By the way, if you want to see a picture of Jephtha, I've got them. Just come by and I'll try to look them up for you. Man, he's growing up, and he had the 7-day quarantine, and the last videos that I got was him getting some tests done, so they're checking everything out. So hopefully everything is moving forward to where he gets his surgery done. So this is something we've been praying for since November of 2020, and something that has been long in this, the mix here. So just keep a prayer for them as they are in the Cayman Islands. That's where they're at right now for all of this. So lots of stuff going on. Let's jump into Genesis chapter 20. Let me just ask you a question. Does anybody, let's just do a public confessional here, okay? All right. Has anybody ever struggled with doubt before? Anybody? Oh, so like everybody. All right. So this is normal. So when we jump into this factional story here of Abraham and what he does, this is something that any of us could do. Now, a lot of us men say, hey, I'd never pull that move, especially since he's already pulled that move and got him into big trouble, and now he's back into the same case. This is a no-no, I don't want to do that. But you know what? How many times do we make the same dumb move over and over and over again? And it's all because of our doubt, our unbelief. Let's just state it for what it is. It's when we decide to not believe in God in that moment. And we have the decision in front of us. Here it is where he struggles. And so what is the effect of doubts? How did it affect Abraham and his wife and those that were affected by this decision, those that were in the zone, if you want to say, the effect zone? How does this affect them? And so let's jump into this in Genesis chapter 20. Let's read verse number 1, and we'll jump right into our point number 1, which is doubt walks away. Now, again, a lot of this you're going to think deja vu, because what's happening is it's almost like he's doing the same thing again. So didn't we hear about this a couple chapters back? Didn't we struggle with this already a couple chapters back? So here we go. Doubt walks away in verse number 1. It says, and Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelled between Kadesh and Shur and sojourned in Gerar. Now, all of a sudden, he's on the move. Did anybody see where God told him to move? Did it say there? Anything? Now, if you've been along with our Genesis journey, you will notice something, that when Abraham starts to make a good move, he often builds something. Does anybody remember what that is? He builds an altar. Why? In worship of God. When he goes in a bad direction, when he starts making a bad move, he neglects that fact. He just moves. Now, why would he be moving in this sense? Well, do you remember we just came off of a great judgment of Sodom and Gomorrah? Can you imagine what would have been the effect of their judgment as the ash had spread over that area? How it would have affected the grass? How would it have affected even trying to get the food for their herds and all of what Abraham would be trying to do? I mean, he saw the destruction. He watched it happening. We had that little jump back into, while it was everything was going on, we jumped back to Abraham and how God remembered Abraham in his prayer, and he's watching it happening. And so you could say, hey, listen, he's going to have some sort of an effect from that judgment that happened over Sodom and Gomorrah. So in order to take care of your herds, in order to take care of your family, the most likely, the most practical solution would be to move, right? Well, when he moves, then that means that he's got new neighbors. When he moves, that means, and if it's not within God telling him to do this move, he starts to make some dumb decisions. He starts to make some sinful decisions. And that's why in this first point, I'm saying here that doubt walks away. Doubt walks away from what God has called him to. When he has a moment of unbelief that where God has placed him, he's going to take care of him. He says, oh, all of a sudden, I got to move. Just like several chapters ago, when famine came to the land, he moved. He's taking care of his family. But yet, you never found that he built an altar in that move either. And so doubt walks away. Tonight, you know, here we are in an anniversary of Grace Baptist Church. And I imagine in the existence of Grace and all of the other churches that you might have been a part of, because maybe some of you have moved to the area, you've been from different states, and so you've had experiences with other congregations. And so a lot of you have been in this scenario where you've been in years and years of dealing with church. And have you ever noticed that at times Christians, in their doubt, they walk away? I mean, in 38 years of Grace's ministry, not everybody is still here. I mean, if you go through how many kids and teenagers have gone through our children's ministry and our teen ministry, and you got to go beyond your fingers and your toes in order to count all these kids, and you're thinking, what happened? Some of it was moving away. A lot of people like to do this mass exodus out of Illinois because there's craziness and chaos here, right? And I think I just heard that we are the highest taxed in the United States. We're the highest now. We made it to number one. Woo-woo! All right, yeah. Isn't that exciting? We're number one. Oh, I've always wanted to be number one. Not in that situation, but anyway. All right, but you know, people move. My daughter, she's told me a couple of times where some of her classmates, they're moving in a month or in 2 months. They're moving. Okay, why? Because people want to get out of Illinois, all right? But so that sometimes that happens where people move for that sake, and so we lose people for that reason. But yet in other reasons, we lose people because of doubt. They walk away. There's this term that's come up not too long ago. It's been in the making for a couple of years. It seemed to be some trendy factor where deconstructing your faith was starting to be popular. And I struggle with that. You know, people that have raised a following, have a following on YouTube and all of that, all of a sudden it started getting trendy of, oh, I'm deconstructing my faith. Man, that's sad. Why? Because of doubt. You notice here, as Abraham is walking away, he doesn't set up the altar for worship. He doesn't consult God. He just does it. And when we do that, what often happens? When we don't consult God, when we don't go by his direction, then we start making some more moves. There's this domino effect. It doesn't just stop with one decision. It just continues on to more. So as we jump into verse number 2, we see here that doubt brings deja vu. Okay, you've heard of that term before, and it says, and Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. So this is what boggles my mind. First of all, Sarah and Abraham are not in their 20s or 30s, okay? All right? They're like up in near the 100 range, okay? And yet still Abraham is concerned about somebody might kill him for his wife's good looks. And he's coming into this situation, and he's already preparing for this. He says, Sarah, listen, you need to tell this guy that you're my sister, and so I don't get killed, right? I don't want any problems. We've got new neighbors. We want to make good neighbors here as we move into this land. And all of a sudden, here it is. This is what they're telling the new people. Hey, she's my sister. Now, we've already talked about this before, where this is a half-truth, in the sense that later on we will find out that there is a portion of that is correct, but he's not being there in the full side of the truth. How many of you would love it if your spouse only gave you half of the truth? Well, that keeps the peace in the home. Ooh, that's scary. That's scary. Let's make an appointment this week, okay? All right? Let's make an appointment. We need to talk through some of these things, all right? But as we get into this, I mean, that's a little sketchy. When the person that we are closest to or should be closest to is only telling us half of it, and if that half is misconstrued, because have you ever, when you've been told something, and this is what gets us in trouble, doesn't it? When you've been told a statement and you haven't been told the full statement, do you ever have problems with assuming? Should we have another confessional here tonight? Has anybody in here had any problems with assuming? Okay, when you don't hear the whole entire thing? All right, you hear the headliner, you read the headliner in the newspaper, oh, that's some clickbait. And you jump in there and it's like, why did they even put that headliner in there? We just automatically assumed you jumped into it. Or sometimes we get into some arguments with our spouse because they only tell us a portion of it. And then we automatically assume what happened, or we assumed what was going on. And then days later, we have to find ourselves apologizing because of our assumptions. It got us into trouble. I've had to do that quite a bit. Okay, because sometimes when you're just moving, you just start assuming things, and then you get in trouble. And in this sense, when we are just only giving a portion of the truth, assumptions can be made. We can be setting up one another for problems. And that's exactly what he's doing here when he's only telling a portion of the truth, which leads them to assume that Sarah is available to be able to take. And that's exactly what happened in the end of the verse. Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Do you think that's problematic? Do you think that's problematic for God's plan? Well, us who have heard the story before, we say, oh no, nothing's problematic for God's plan. It's going to happen no matter what. But in that moment, Abraham is setting them up for problems concerning God's plan. Is God's plan enough for Abraham in that moment? The promise of a blessed family, and that all the nations of the earth would be blessed through his family and through his lineage, and they were going to have this son, and everything was going to move from there. And here it is, the promise that they've been hoping for, and they could toss it all away in this moment of doubt when he walked away from where he was to a point where he was able to tell a half-truth. He wasn't telling the entirety of the truth. Here we have another problem. Anybody tell me, can anybody tell me what good came out of Egypt when he lied back in Egypt? Anybody? What did they get back in Egypt when Abraham lied and said, oh, Sarah's my sister? What did they get? Hagar. Which then brought another dumb move by Abraham and Sarah. Hey, why don't you just take Hagar? She's my servant. And then you got Ishmael. And we're still dealing with those problems today. We're still dealing with those problems. And so when we are in a moment of doubt, we're not an island to ourselves. We need to make sure we understand how this affects. And when we have a moment of doubt, listen, we're probably going to have that same moment of doubt coming up pretty soon. If we're not believing God now, listen, we're going to have some struggles later on if we're not going to Say, hey, I'm gonna believe in God. I'm gonna have faith in that His plan is better, that His way is better. His word is the truth, and He says this truth shall set me free, right? From this bondage that my doubt creates. So as we jump into this, here we have another effect. Here it is. It's making it more problematic. So let's go into that next point. Yeah, we're moving pretty fast. Doubt weakens your stand. Doubt weakens your stand. Let's go to verse number 3. It says, but God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, thou art but a dead man. Anybody have like to have a dream like that? For the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife. You ever have nightmares? Do you ever have nightmares where you actually get up and you're still half asleep and you start trying to take care of the situation at hand? Anybody ever do that, or is it just me? And then Keeley's waking up, what is wrong with you? Where are you going? And then all of a sudden in that moment, I'm just standing there. I'm not sure what I'm doing here. There's something wrong. I'm trying to take care of it. Okay, but in this moment, God is actually speaking to this man who's taken Sarai, who he's an innocent man. And yet in this nightmare, if you want to say, God states, you're dead. You're a dead man. You've taken somebody else's wife. Wouldn't it be interesting if God would do that a little bit more often in our day and age? I think we'd have less confusion in the school district, wouldn't we? Stop. Don't do this. You want judged? You've got the option. But in this moment, what is God doing? What's God stepping in and doing for this man? He's coming in and he's upholding his own standard for the marriage that he created. Who created marriage? Hallmark? Who created it? God did. And so therefore, God, if he ever wants to change it, he can, right? But he's not going to. Because when he made it, it's good. Why would he change it? So why are we as humanity trying to change what God presents here? And in this moment, Abraham decided that he wasn't going to uphold again for another time God's standard for marriage. But then also God's proceeding here with presenting this man with, hey, I have a serious outlook on sin. Sin is serious. Sin is a reality that it goes in opposition to God. And here he is. He says, hey, listen, you will be judged. See, there's also humanity that likes to lessen the ideology of what sin is, of the consequences of it. Hey, let's lessen that. Let's not make it so rough to people so it's easier to accept. You know, forgiveness, why do we need forgiveness? Because sin isn't really that big of a deal. And then I would propose to ask this question, then why did Jesus die? If sin isn't such a big deal, why did God love us so much that he sent his only begotten son to die for us to offer a way of salvation? What's the point? Obviously, God has stated what he believes about this sin. And as we heard this morning, there is a judgment coming. There is a condemnation that is there because of our sin. And here he is, he's stepping in and he's stating, hey, listen, you will be judged if you take part in this sin. But you know what? Here's another thought that I want you to be thinking about, is that God desires for us to know the truth. He doesn't want us to stay in our own ignorance. You say, where are you getting that from? Well, if you read that verse again, it says, but God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, thou art but a dead man, for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife. You say, why are you talking about that, how God desires for us to know truth and to not be ignorant? Because he stepped in this moment, and in his own mercy, he decided to tell Abimelech that he had messed up. When the man was ignorant, he decided to step in and give him the truth so that he had the ability to choose what he was going to do with it next. I love that about God's word. Listen, we don't have to be ignorant. God gives it so that we can know the truth and so that the truth can set us free. In the same way with tonight, as we are looking through this, he had the ability to be set free from the consequence of this because he hadn't even committed anything yet, but God had stepped in with his own mercy to be able to offer this. Listen, Abraham, he doesn't always have a serious outlook on sin. God does. Abraham didn't even think highly of the truth in this situation. He was just trying to survive. But God wants us to know the truth. And in this moment, it weakened our stand, his stand. In those moments of our own doubt, and when we decide that sin isn't as serious as what God states it is, how do other people see that? How do other people see our belief system? In Sunday school this morning, we were talking about a worldview and how if we have a biblical worldview, it's like giving someone a playbook as a Christian. And when someone decides not to use that playbook, it reveals what they actually believe in, right? What they do, how they act, shows how they believe. And in this instance, Abimelech, who's in this situation and who has been threatened of his life in the middle of the night, is looking at Abraham and thinking, does this guy really believe? Because as we jump into the next few verses, let's go to our fourth point, doubt breeds irony. We go into verses 4 through 7. It says, but Abimelech had not come near her. Okay, he hadn't even touched her. And he said, Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, she is my sister? And she herself said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this. So he's stepping up and he's putting up a defense. Hey, I haven't done anything here wrong, okay? Are you going to judge someone who is innocent? I haven't touched her. I haven't done anything. They lied to me. Verse 6, and God said unto him in a dream, yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thine heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore suffered I thee not to touch her. Now therefore, restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know thou that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. So here he is. The plot thickens here as Abimelech is coming out here and he's asking, are you going to judge me? I haven't done anything yet. God gives him a choice. He gave him the truth, and now he's allowed to choose based on the truth that's been presented to him. He could still make a choice. Do you know, we have a free will. God has created us with a free will, and we see that here in this fact right there. Now in his free will, he's either going to live or he's going to die. If he continues to take Sarah and to take this other man's wife, there is a consequence that's going to be had. But if he chooses God's way, then there will be freedom. But you know, the irony about all of this is the fact that Abraham was just a few chapters ago interceding on behalf of his own family member, Lot. He was reaching out. He's saying, hey, listen, would you judge this? Would you still consume this land if there was so many righteous people? And then this intercessory prayer just kept continuing on. And he kept lessening the amount of people down to an amount of 10. If there's 10 people, will you still consume this land? And God says he would not. And yet, in this chapter, through his decision and his doubt, his own unbelief, he has taken someone who didn't do anything wrong, and he's presented a stumbling block. He has set them up for death. In our unbelief, in our own selfishness, the people that we're praying for, or the people like the ones that we were praying for, we end up setting up for defeat. You know all those names that are on the back wall there that we're praying for salvation? Have you ever revealed to them your unbelief? Have you ever had a moment, a struggle of doubt? Have they ever come back and say, wait, don't you believe in God? Or do you think that they've ever thought about that? Well, I imagine that's every single one of us. In front of our family members who've chosen the way of doubt and they've walked away. And yet we, in our own doubt, have showed our unbelief, and it's just given them another excuse just to stay away. Isn't that the struggle sometimes, where we, in our own irony of how we pray for these people, we step in front of them and show them our unbelief, and then there's just another excuse? A bit of irony. Something to think about. Let's jump into that fifth point there. Doubt should foster confrontation. And I think this still breeds irony as we jump through verses 8 through 13. It says, therefore Abimelech rose early in the morning. Did you hear that? He slept until noon and then decided to get up. Did anybody read that? Maybe we should go back to the Hebrew. Does anybody have a Hebrew Bible? We need to check the. Well, he got up early. Why did he get up? You think he was motivated a little bit? You think his motivation avoided the procrastination? He got up early and called all of his servants and told all the things in their ears, and the men were sore afraid. So he's going around and he's telling everybody about it. He says, then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, what hast thou done unto us, and what have I offended thee, that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what sawest thou that thou hast done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed she is my sister, she is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. So there's the half-truth, folks. Well, let me just kind of justify myself out of this half-lie, half-truth that I tried to propose to you. Here, let me justify my sin. Here he is, he's trying to do it. And what it goes on into verse 12, and yet indeed she is my sister, she is the daughter of my father and not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, this is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me at every place whither we shall come. Say of me, he is my brother. So this is some agreement that they made early on. Anytime we go somewhere, doesn't matter where we're going, just let them know, you're my sister, not my wife. I don't want any problems. When there's doubt in our lives, it should foster confrontation. And we struggle with does anybody struggle with confrontation in here? Anybody? Should we do another confessional? How many of you struggle with confrontation? All right? I struggle with it. How many of you love confrontation? Let's have another confessional here. All right? Okay. Nobody wanted to raise their hand. Not a lot of people love confrontation. And yet, when something is wrong, we need to be able to step into their lives and say, hey, what's up? What's going on here? We need to care enough to the point where we step in and say, hey, why are you doing this? Why are you making these steps? You know what? Those people, sometimes they turn around and say, you're mean. Why are you doing this to me? Listen, you're not mean for talking about how things are going awry here. You know, sometimes love is tough. I imagine talking about, did anybody watch that video clip where it was I think it was the president of Ukraine was there in a video clip, and they were doing something with the news, and there was a guy behind him, and he was holding a gun, and all of a sudden the magazine clip just fell out of his gun. And you could tell, like, this is a problem. So he's trying to pass it off, like he was trying to hide it. So he kind of slid his hand over where it would have been the magazine, because he doesn't want to be in front of the entire international news here. He doesn't want to look like an idiot. Magazine dropping out. Here it is. There's war going on. And one of the other guys, you could tell, He'd been doing this for, he's probably a vet. He's been doing this for a long time. He doesn't care about the cameras. He just walks over, grabs the clip, and he gives it to him. Say, why? Because, you know, you don't want to go off to war with your magazine clip on the ground. Why? Because if you care about that person, you want them to survive. You want them to live. There's a reason why there's this phrase called the band of brothers. They want you to continue on. Do you know we often sing this song, Onward, Christian Soldiers. How many times does Paul bring up the fact that there is the imagery of us being standing in one unit, standing, holding fast, being in one line, sticking together? These are all military tactics that were used in that time period for whatever, Roman soldiers, what have you, in order to survive, in order to win. And this is exactly what he's called us to. And so all of a sudden, one of our fellow Christian soldiers, you look over and their magazine clip dropped out of their gun and they're trying to hide it. Let me help you out there. Put in your gun. You're going to need that. When people doubt, we need to step into their lives. When people doubt and people don't step into their lives, people that care about them don't make the confrontation in their lives, guess what? They keep doubting until there is a point where it's hard to make any confrontation in their lives. Have you ever seen that happen? They want nothing to do with it. Why didn't you say something 20 years ago? I'm too far gone now. I haven't set foot into a church for 20 years. I mean, it'd be embarrassing to show up on a service. And what are people going to say to me? And what if we would have just gone to them right away and said, hey, what's going on here? Why are you walking away? Why do you keep showing your unbelief? How can I help you? How can I be your accountability? How can I step in and hold fast? Show me, where did you drop your magazine Okay, let me grab it for you. Let's stick it back in there. Let's be ready for the battle, because every single day we have to wake up ready for war. Because a spiritual battle, there's no quit. There's no negotiations. It just keeps going. And yet, the humility here is Abimelech, who Abraham, did you get that? When he moved to this place, he said he didn't think anybody feared God. He assumed. He assumed no one feared God, and in this moment, that was his excuse. Hey, nobody's going to confront me in this situation, so I'll just keep sinning, right? And here he is, he's saying, we're a righteous nation. Why did you do this to me? Obviously, this man fears God enough to where he's like, let's do something about this. And here he is, who he believed was an unbeliever, comes up to him and confronts him about his own sin. I wonder if that's ever happened to you. I mean, it's talked about a whole lot in communities all over the world. Why don't you believe in God? Because Christians are just a bunch of hypocrites. Have you ever heard that? That's a pretty good confrontation, don't you think? Now, I often return to, hey, none of us are perfect. You don't usually go to a hospital if you're all good. Anybody go to a hospital, they just like making appointments with their doctors when they're totally good. Okay? I don't like stepping foot in there. Okay? Unless I'm visiting someone else. It's a lot, you know, easier on my part, right? But in that sense of you don't usually go to a hospital unless you're sick. Why do we gather as a church? Because we know that Christ hasn't come and got us yet. And so there's still a progressive sanctification happening. We're still growing. And so we need to still learn more. And so, hey, I'm not perfect. I'm not trying to present to you that I'm perfect. I'm just here gathering with the people who don't believe that they're perfect and know that they need more of Jesus. And they want to come and to love and provoke into love and to good works. They want to assemble together. They want to encourage. They want to be able to confront when there's doubt. This needs to happen. And so that's usually how I respond. Listen, I understand. You probably think a lot of people are hypocrites because they say one thing and do something totally different. But this should only help us in striving to be more like Jesus. Don't give up when they say that. Say, hey, I understand. I'm a sinner saved by grace. I still need Jesus today just as much as I did the day I got saved. That's what the gospel is all about. So as you jump into this last part, here it is. There's a confrontation. But you know, in this last point, I say doubt doesn't deserve respect, but God does. I think it's interesting in how he responds in Abimelech in these verses 14 through 18. It says, and Abimelech took sheep and oxen, and men servants, and women servants, and gave them unto Abraham, and restored him Sarah, his wife. So all of a sudden, Abram just got a ton of stuff. Now in that moment, how many of you think, wait, he doesn't deserve any of this? You're struggling with the money. Why is Abimelech giving him all this stuff when he's just been threatened his life? Abraham set him up for defeat. What's going on? Goes on, and Abimelech said, behold, my land is before thee, dwell where it pleaseth thee. Hey, take up shop. Go ahead. Live here. It just blows my mind that he's allowing this. But you know what? That's some extra humiliation for Abraham. You think God's using this in a mighty way? It goes on and says, and unto Sarah he said, behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Ooh, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Behold, he is to thee a covering of the eyes unto all that are with thee and with all other. Thus she was reproved in the sense of he wanted to honor the purity to where he did not touch her. He wanted to prove that there was purity there. There was nothing that happened. And so he just threw in a ton of silver to Abraham. So Abraham prayed unto God. And God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And so here we find another consequence of what had happened in this situation where no one else was going to be having children in Abimelech's kingdom. All those that he was taking care of, all those that he was leading, all of a sudden, no more growth. No more people. This is it. And yet the person that had sinned against him, the person that had lied, gets to pray for him, and then God heals him. How humiliating for Abraham. And you say, why is God making him do all this? So he won't do it again. But why is he getting all these gifts? It's not, I really honestly do not believe that Abimelech's saying, hey, Abraham, I love you so much, I'm just giving you all these things. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's the fact that he fears God and wants to make sure that God's man is blessed in this sense. And he's saying, here, take all of this. I know who reigns. I know who's creator of the universe. I know who can take my life. Hear it all. Here's everything. And that's why in this last point, I would definitely say that Abraham is not deserving of any respect for doing what he did at the end. He's only doing what God has asked him to do in the sense of, hey, he was in trouble. But you know what? All the respect, all the worship goes back to God, who when we mess up and we show our doubt, when we reveal our unbelief in front of other people, listen, we need to get back into the ministry. We need to minister to others, even to the people that we've messed up to. And God gets the glory. God gets the honor. We don't deserve, hey, this is not all about us. Oh man! Oh my flocks just grew. Can you think? Do you think Abraham's gloating about that? Oh, my treasuries are full. Do you think he's talking about? I don't think he's talking about that. I think he's coming in with bowed head, having a hard time looking into Abimelech's eyes. And he puts his belief back in God, prays to him, asks him for blessing, for healing upon this people, and gets back to business. You know what's important here? Like I said earlier, when somebody steps into our life to confront doubt, sometimes it's painful. But when we return back to our belief in God, that's what's best. And God gets the glory. Oh, well, Pastor McPhillips, he's doing such a great job bringing in the sheaves. Oh, man, he's good. You know, Pastor McPhillips doesn't want that. He doesn't want the people to glorify him. He wants that to be turned back to God. Say, man, God's just using Pastor McPhillips as a tool to be able to bring him in. Well, our children's program, they're just so amazing. Oh, can you believe it? I mean, our workers, they're top-notch. They are better than any church in our community. Oh, man, and we just go on and we just start praising them. Listen, our children's workers, if they're up to snuff, they don't want the glory. They want God to get the glory. Oh, our teen group, it's actually growing. Oh, man, Barry, he must be a great teacher. Oh, Carlton, he must be doing, you know, the Carlton back there to bring them all in, you know. He's just bringing them all in. Oh, it's just great. Listen, if they're up to snuff, they're saying, no, 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 no. God gets the glory. And sometimes even our great children's workers and our great youth workers and our great deacons, whatever it might be, whoever's working in any area, sometimes we have our doubt, but then we're brought back. Listen, God, man, thank you for your mercy. Thank you for the grace. Thank you for giving me a million chances. Thank you for putting people in my life that care enough to come and step out for me and to put their neck out for me, because guess what? Sometimes people bite. Thank God for using people in my life to bring me back to the cross. That's what this is all about. So doubt has great effect, but listen, my challenge to you is step into people's lives to help them in their doubt. When you're having your doubt, shut it down. Go back to God. Make sure you're in worship. If you're stepping outside a church and you're walking away from it, guess what? More opportunity for doubt. More opportunity just to show that you're not believing in what's going on. And you know, because God has stated that you need to be with this church. I mean, this is all real. This is reality. This isn't just in Abraham's time where there was a struggle. This is a struggle all around us. And so keep being in people's lives. Keep allowing other people to interact with you and bring you back to the cross. This is so important for us as Grace Baptist Church. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much for this truth. God, thank you for all the years that you've given us here in this community to be able to serve you, to love you. And God, you've done amazing things. We praise you for how much has been given in sacrifice, how you've used people to build this building, to send out missionaries, to encourage young people, to encourage all people to reach out into our neighborhoods and to offer this gospel that you've given us. God, thank you so much. But God, doubt's real. And we've all struggled with it. God, help others to be in our lives that we allow to confront us when we are doubting, when our unbelief shows. God, help us come back quickly. God, help us. Give us the courage to step into people's lives. To ask questions. To get deeper. Be willing to hold their hand and bring them back. God, thank you for all that you do. In Jesus' name, amen. David.